This is Marti versus Iberostar Hoteliers and our apartments. Mr. Patricius.
Good morning, Your Honor. Leon Patricius on behalf of the appellant. The issue
before— Anyone have any good news from us from Europe?
There was a status report filed, Your Honor, which I can get into, but if you're interested, I can answer that question.
We don't have an answer from the commission?
Just that they're going to give us an answer.
By mid-September, today's the 16th, we still don't have an answer?
We don't have an answer, Judge, and that presumes that we should be waiting for their answer, which my argument is we should never be waiting for their argument.
Yeah, I understand.
And that's our primary—
I just wanted to know if we had one.
And, Your Honor, I think both counsel would recognize, even after oral argument, if a decision does come out, I think we would both notify this court of anything that does come out. Again, I don't think it's relevant for the decision. That's not my decision to make. I think the court is entitled to that information. We would certainly file a notice if something comes out.
Well, if there were permission granted.
Yes, we would ask for permission, Judge.
You would say that's not relevant? We wouldn't want to know that?
Well, I don't think it is relevant. And the reason I don't think it's relevant, Your Honor, is because United States district courts should not take a foreign executive branch's decision as the point upon which they will decide whether to move forward or not move forward.
Yeah, but I mean, my point is, if the foreign government has no objection, then it sure makes life easier, doesn't it?
It would, Judge. It would, but we don't know what they're going to say. We don't know if they're going to say anything.
Yeah.
The point is, as we sit here today, on the record that is before this court, we believe Judge Scola got it wrong when he decided to defer this case, stay this case, pending the ruling of an executive branch of a foreign government using a foreign law that was designed to interfere with United States law. We do not believe that should be the precedent.
And just to make sure, and then I promise we'll let you get to the real argument, but no matter if we got a ruling, no matter what the ruling was, that would dissolve the stay, right?
It should, Judge Grant. It should, because what Judge Scola said is upon a decision from that body, he would move forward. But we don't know what the body will say. We don't know if it says something like, I need further information. So it could. But it shouldn't stop this court from addressing the issue that is here. Why? Courts have already started to cite, and litigants are citing the Marti case before Judge Scola as precedent. Just this.
Well, anyone who cites a district court opinion as precedent is committing malpractice.
I won't mention.
District court opinions aren't precedential.
They're arguing that it is persuasive. They're arguing that this is what a judge did in another case.
That's a different argument.
And the precedent that we think this court should make is to say quite clearly, because there's quite a few Helms-Burton cases out there, and there's obviously quite a few European defendants out there, is that the district courts should not be deferring their decisions or staying cases based on what these foreign bodies are saying. To put it in perspective, Judge, it's 884 days ago. 2 years, 5 months that the stay or the request for the stay was entered. And the request was made by a foreign defendant, Iberostar, to a foreign executive branch, the European Commission, with a foreign law asking for authorization to participate in United States courts. And there was not one 11th Circuit case that I could find that supports that proposition at all. In fact, this court has been very clear as to the circumstances that would allow a court, a district court, to stay. And I'll give Your Honors two examples. The first example would be Turner Entertainment versus DeGhetto, 25 Fed 3rd, 112, 11th Circuit, 1994. In that case, there was a parallel adversary proceeding in Germany that went to final judgment. This court noted all the parties to the American litigation were parties to the German litigation. That's note 6 of that opinion. This court noted that the central issue in the German case was the same as in this case. So what did we have there? We had parallel proceedings. We don't have that here. We had a final judgment from the German court. We don't have that here. We had a...
Yeah, and we looked at whether the state reflected a proper respect for a foreign nation. The problem, it seems to me here, given those differences, is this doesn't even look like it's out of respect for a nation. This looks like it's out of respect for a foreign litigant.
You couldn't have said it better, Judge Pryor. This has got nothing to do with the nation. It's got something to do with the litigant who is afraid of a potential fine. We pointed out to the district court at least five occasions where European defendants had participated in U.S. cases and had not been fined. So that was a supposition by the Iberostar that they were going to be fined. Another case that Your Honors said a stay was fined was Miccosukee Tribe versus South Florida Water Management, 559 Fed 3rd, 1191. In that case, the tribe had sued the South Florida Management Water Management District over four or five permits in case number one. They had an identical case about one permit in case number two. Case number one had gone to the Supreme Court, back to this court, back to the district court. The judge in case number two said, I'm going to stay my case number two because the issues in case number one are going to dispose of the issues in case number two. We don't have that here in this case because we don't have a proceeding that's going to dispose of the Helms-Burton matter in this case. To the contrary, Your Honor, there are many cases from this court where it found jurisdiction number one and reversed on the merits number two. The first case I'll cite to Your Honors is American Manufacturers versus Stone, 743 Fed 2nd, 1519. In that case, a state court, United States state court action was pending that involved some of the parties and some of the issues as the federal case. The federal judge stayed the federal case pending the outcome of the state court case, and this court reversed, saying you cannot stay your case based on what's going to happen in a state court case because that's indefinite and unnecessary.
It seems to me that your merits argument is easier than the jurisdictional argument.
I'll turn to that, Judge. All right, so the jurisdictional argument, Judge, the first point is this. I'm not aware of any precedent that says a litigant must appeal from the initial stay order and cannot later move for the court to lift the stay and appeal from that.
What about the final order problem?
Well, that's where the King case, the King versus Cessna case comes in, Your Honor, and that's your precedent from the 11th Circuit, and it specifically says the general rule is that a stay is not a final disposition, and I'm quoting from page 1165 of King, which is 505, 1160. To your point, the general rule is that a stay is not a final disposition and thus is not immediately appealable. Quote, however, there is an exception for stays that put a plaintiff, quote, effectively out of court, end quote. And in applying that exception, we have held that a stay order that is immoderate, step one, and involves a protracted and indefinite period of delay is final and appealable under 28 U.S.C. 1291. So we have that here in the third order that Judge Scola entered, not the first order and not the second order. The test, going back to Judge Pryor, what I was saying to you, is I'm not aware of a case that says just because you don't appeal the first stay order, you cannot later appeal a denial of a motion to lift the stay. And I'll cite a court, an instance in which that happened from this court's precedent from the Fifth Circuit. We cited it in our briefs. It's the Hines case. And the Hines case was a case from 1976 that we cited to Your Honors. It's 531 Fed Circuit 7, Fed 2nd, 725. In that case, the district court sua sponte entered a stay of a 1981 action and said to the litigants, plaintiff, go to the EOC, get a final process at the EOC, then come back to me. Nobody appealed the stay order. A few months later, in October of 1974, the parties moved to modify the stay. The judge modified it in part, according to the court's opinion, the Fifth Circuit's opinion, but essentially adhered to his original request or demand, which was go to the EOC. The parties or the plaintiffs then appealed that second order, and the Fifth Circuit reversed. No discussion in that case, judges, of the fact of whether you have to appeal the first order or the second order, the third order. I haven't found a case that discusses that. And the reason is the King test, which says you have to be effectively out of court. In order to be effectively out of court, in order to show that there's been a protracted and indefinite period of time, it is a facts and circumstances case. You may not have it the moment the stay was entered. And
part of the reason why I think whether we get an answer from the European Commission or not is important is I don't know how you can say that this is in a state of suspended animation if they do what they say they're going to do.
If they do what they say they're going to do, Judge, but that's been pending now for over 2 years, and we don't know of any precedent that says we should wait 2 years, not even a year. The courts have not set a time frame that we must wait. In fact, this court has said you should not wait. You should not wait for the pending state court proceeding to finish. You should not, unless it's parallel, and that was the case with the German proceeding. This is not parallel, Your Honors. I see my time is up. I think I've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Okay. Ms. Placencia, I'm sorry.
That's fine. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Rebecca Placencia, and along with my partner, Adolfo Jimenez, from Holland & Knight, representing the defendant, Appellee Iberostar. Your Honors, first and foremost, as you said, there is a major jurisdictional issue in this case. Without question, the original April 2020 state order was not appealed. And in fact, in the reply brief on page 5, they admit that the April 2020 state order did not put them effectively out of court. They did file a motion.
That was 2 years ago, right? Haven't the circumstances changed?
Well, that's interesting because, yes, it's been 2.5 years since the original state order has changed, but the order on appeal is the May 2021 order on reconsideration. And this court is bound by the record that was before the district court. And at that point in time, only 5.5 months had passed since the September 2020 order denying the plaintiff's motion to lift the stay and the renewed motion to lift the stay, which reiterated all of the same arguments.
It does seem like it was a substantial alteration of the stay when the motion to limit the stay to no longer than 75 more days was denied. Why isn't that a substantial alteration of the stay?
With respect to the September 2020 order?
The order we're here on today.
So we're here on the May 2021 order, which just says you didn't meet the standard for reconsideration, where they were re-arguing the merits of the September 2020 order. And in the September 2020 order, that's at that point in time, the stay had been in effect for, yes, longer than 75 days. But they did not appeal that order. And counsel is saying that he knows of no precedent of a motion to lift the stay not being a motion for reconsideration. But this court in American Manufacturers Mutual Insurance Company versus Stone mentions in the footnote that the motion to lift the stay was not timely filed under any of the deadlines set forth in Federal Rules of Appellate Procedure 4, which would toll the time for filing the appeal. So even if, because again, there is... There doesn't seem to be a clear precedent as to whether an original motion to lift the stay is a motion for reconsideration or its own original motion that restarts the appellate clock. Even if we claim that to be an original motion, that September 2020 order was not appealed. And that's the one that really has the Turner analysis that explains that the district court was granting the stay on the basis of international comity. They did not appeal, and they waited 5.5 months to simply file a renewed motion for reconsideration. They called a renewed motion to lift the stay that just says the exact same arguments. If you compare the dockets, it's docket 21 and 32, it's almost identical, except they're just adding it's been an additional 5.5 months. That's not sufficient. That in and of itself is not sufficient. And
what about the communication that reinforced the intent to strengthen the regulation, basically the policy against allowing enforcement of the Helms-Burton Act?
And yet nothing was ever amended. I mean, the communication isn't new evidence. It doesn't add anything. It's simply the EC saying, well, the Helms-Burton Act was suspended for 23 years. Now we're dusting off this EC regulation, just like the Helms-Burton Act was being dusted off. To the extent we're getting applications in, we're going to have to start looking at this issue. They didn't have time. For as long as the Helms-Burton Act was suspended, really so was this EC regulation. It wasn't being applied, so, you know, they couldn't work the kinks out. All this EC communication says is we're going to look at this issue. You know, we may need to streamline the authorization process, but it doesn't issue an amendment. It doesn't put forth any definitive acts are going to take place. Nothing has changed. The EC regulation remains as it was when it was enacted in 1996.
What if instead of 2 years having gone by, it's 5 years? Could that support could that be new circumstances that would support a renewed motion, essentially a new original motion?
I think so. I think 5 years is excessive. But again, we have to look at this. I know 2.5 years from the date of the original order to this oral argument seems like a lot. We have to put this in context of the fact that when the stay order was granted, we had just started a global shutdown. because of COVID. It hit Europe particularly hard. It hit the hotel industry particularly hard. I mean, Iberostar was down to 5% of its staff. That's in the record in one of the affidavits. The EC, quite frankly, was probably dealing with bigger things than some random application that came in. And as they were dealing with
If it's just a random application, then why should we wait? Why shouldn't we let this party carry forth its case in American courts?
Well, it's just that it's the first application it's ever seen of this Helms-Burton Act. I mean, the plaintiffs even admits that this was a case of first impression. So, yes, they're going to look at it carefully because for them, this is going to set a precedent for other EU defendants. And I know that opposing counsel has mentioned that they cited to five cases in their brief where other EU defendants appeared to have participated without
I'm
first.
I'm sure that's really responsive to Judge Grant's question. It seems to me that, you know, it's been this long. The stay can't, you agree, the stay at some point becomes excessive. Isn't it time to get this moving?
But first, we're here on a motion for reconsideration order, right? So we're looking at the record as it appeared before the district court, which was at that point 5.5 months. But even if you were to look at this 2.5 year stay as of today, the date of this oral argument, we're looking at this, quite frankly, in context of...
The district court granted a stay in April 2020, right?
That was the original stay.
And then Marti renewed her motion to lift the stay in March 2021, right?
That was the renewed motion to lift the stay, yes. There was a...
That's nearly a year. You keep talking about 5 months.
Well, because there was a July 2020, the original motion to lift the stay. And that's the one where the plaintiffs argued what they're arguing here before this court, that it is immoderate and indefinite, that it's putting them effectively out of court. And the district court issued a very detailed analysis in September 2020, saying in the interest of international comity, and because of the unique circumstances of this case. And let me...
I mean, when we're looking, you say we're going to look at the record, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stay April 2020. Correct. Then we have that July motion, then we have a September ruling, then we have a March of 2021 renewed motion. I mean, this is a lot more than 5 months.
Right. Well, the 5.5 months refers to the September 2020 order.
But my point is, it's not an accurate characterization of what the delay here is.
Well, we also have to put this delay in the context of the Helms-Burton Act, which was itself delayed and suspended for 23 years. I mean, any delay to the plaintiffs, to be frank, occurred long before this litigation was filed. I mean, they already have an expired claim because the plaintiff, the named plaintiff in this case, the estate, didn't acquire its interest until 2007. So there are a lot of issues here to the extent that they're arguing about losing evidence, losing witnesses. That most likely happened long before this lawsuit was filed because of the fact that we had this suspension for so long. And here we have a very real and concrete threat to Iberostar. They're facing 600,000 per violation, up 600,000 euros fine per violation per the Spanish law. And I know that opposing counsel is referring to other defendants who weren't sanctioned. None of those defendants were Spanish entities, and this is actually important because the EC regulation also contains a provision in Article 9 that each member country can issue its own laws with respect to enacting that EC regulation. Spain is particularly draconian, to be frank, and has that has enacted a law, which is cited in our papers, that a Spanish entity who participates in a Helms-Burton Act proceeding without first obtaining authorization will be fined 600,000 euros. France does not. The cases that they're citing have French entities, German, Dutch. None of them were Spanish entities. And we have to take that into account. There's a reason why we afford district courts discretion. And that is because these are unique circumstances. It's very tempting to say we're going to do a bright line rule that a district court can never, on the grounds of international comity, stay a litigation in deference to a foreign blocking statute. But that's not what the court did here. We're not deferring to a foreign blocking statute. The district court said, I'm going to give you a chance to seek an exception to the foreign blocking statute. That is what Iberostar was asking for. Time to get an exception to the blocking statute so that it could comply, so that it could participate in these proceedings.
Not in deference to some ongoing proceeding.
Well, there is supposed to be obviously a ruling. I don't think anyone anticipated at the time that so many global factors would.
It's not a parallel proceeding like there was in the Turner case, right?
That's true, but Turner obviously, international comedy obviously indicates or implicates the situation where there can be a parallel proceeding, but that's not an exclusive requirement for a stay based on international comedy. As the district court noted in this case, you know, there is still deference to, in some respect, of respect for our fellow sovereign nations in having an interest in enforcing their own laws, particularly a case of first impression.
An interest in enforcing their own laws that are intended to block our own laws. That might diminish the international comedy interests.
With respect to whether and in what circumstances to grant an exception, because this is the first, again, our client was not saying, we're hiding behind this blocking statute, we can't participate. Our client is saying, we want time to get an exception so that we can participate. And that application, that Article 5 application, is a case of first impression before the EC. So time for them to take a look at this and say, okay, we put in this regulation that if there's financial or legal consequences, you know, of an extreme nature, that in certain circumstances we will allow an EU defendant to participate. Well, let's take a look at that. What are the situations we're looking at?
Might it be true that in September or in September, when Marty received the ruling, they thought, well, we understand given the current circumstances, but 5.5 months later, even if we limit it to 5.5 months later, things might have seemed different. The interests might have seemed different after that extended period of time, such that at that point there might be a reason to renew that motion.
But the only thing they argued was, okay, it's an additional few months. They argued the exact same arguments that they
Right, but what I'm saying is, it's an additional few months, I think, seems to minimize the extent of the delay and the effect that it has on the opposing party's ability to bring its lawsuit here.
Again?
I mean, you could say, okay, it's been 10 years. I mean, I guess we should wait for Europe, right? At a certain point, that becomes too long.
I agree that at a certain point, it does become too long. But at the time that the district court had it, even if you are looking at from the original April 2020 order to the May 2021 order, 1 year where the district court did take into account there was a pandemic going on. This might, you know, be one of the reasons why the European Commission has been taking longer to rule on this. And again, in the context of the prejudice to the party, there is a real and concrete threat to Iberostar. And yet to the plaintiff, the damage was done by a 23-year suspension of the statute. That's where the real prejudice came in, not necessarily in the context of the, I mean, this is a taking that occurred over 60 years ago. Evidence as to ownership, chain of title, you know, where are the witnesses?
My concern is the stay itself looks to me indefinite and unreasonable. I don't know when it ends.
But Your Honor, in that case, they should have appealed.
We were told, you know, we were in advance of this oral argument, we were told, oh, the commission's going to do something by mid-September. It's 16th. Here we are. We're still waiting. Should we wait till the end of the month to rule? What should we do? Wait forever?
No, obviously, of course, Your Honor, we can't wait forever. But again, we're bound by the record that was before the district court. And if you're looking at,
I'm looking at the district court's order and trying to figure out whether it's indefinite and unreasonable in scope. And it looks to me like it is.
But the May 2021 order did not reinstate the September 20th.
The end. I mean, if I look at the whole record, denial after denial after denial, it looks to me like this is unreasonable and indefinite in scope. What am I missing?
Well, it's not indefinite in the sense that we know there's going to be a definite cutoff. The district court did specify this is not when the EC grants your application. This is whenever the EC rules. Remember, we do have the Supreme Court precedent in Landis saying even if there does seem to be an indefinite timeline, a stay will not be moderate if there was a pressing need for it. In this case, we have significant financial and legal consequences that Iberostar would face.
And it seemed, I think, somewhat more pressing when the ruling was made. Does your client have the ability to make any filings with the commission to request a ruling or anything like that?
We are in the EC requests updates on the status of the litigation, and we do every status report, there is basically a renewal is my understanding of the communication. But what the EC does with those communications, I don't know.
When you say the renewal of the communication, are there requests for a ruling or just updates that the stay is still continuing here?
I'm actually not sure. Yes, there are requests for a ruling.
Okay.
And the original request was an expedited one that was made. And I think they know that obviously that the stay is in place. This is
obviously a difficult issue of international law, and it makes it a lot easier for the European Commission if they don't make a decision and United States courts stay action until they make a decision, right?
Yes, of course, it makes it easier.
Yeah,
for that.
Allows them to get the effect of their blocking regulation without having to decide whether to grant an exception to it.
Your Honors, I see that my time is up.
Do you have anything else to say, Ms. Pansencia?
Just that again, it would be tempting to issue a bright line rule, but we must be very careful to not strip the district courts of their discretion. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Patricius.
Your Honors, let me quickly address jurisdiction and some of the questions on timing, and I think the easiest way to do that is to apply the rule of King, which is you need to have a stay order that's immoderate and involves a protracted and indefinite period of delay to the facts of this case. April 24th stay order. It was entered a day after the motion was filed. What did that motion say? Docket entry 16, page 45 of your appendix, paragraph 2. Quote, to avoid a protracted delay, this request for a stay is limited to no more than 75 days. Also in the motion, Iberostar says, the duration of the requested stay is short and subject to reasonable limits. They represent to the court they expect a ruling in 10 weeks. The court the next day stays. How are we supposed to appeal that order on that record and prove to this court that we have an immoderate and protracted and indefinite period of delay when the representation of the court is 10 weeks? That is precisely why the rule is not that you must appeal that first stay order. Instead, it appears, I haven't seen a court that has said it, that it is a facts and circumstances case based on the facts. And on those facts, Your Honors, I would not be here before you saying that we have an immoderate stay. What happened next? Well, the 10 weeks passed, nothing happened. We filed our first motion to lift the stay, and the court ruled on that in its September 17th order, which was the lengthy order. In that order, Judge Scola was very careful to say, I am studying these reports that have come out. I think three or four status reports have come out. He said, and he rightfully so, the most recent status report indicates the commission's is extensively involved. This is page 120 of our record, docket entry 25. He found that the EC was providing updates. He, quote, said, the European Commission's active consideration of the application is evidenced by the European Commission's and Iberostar's active dialogue regarding the application since it was filed in April of 2020. And the court assured us that under applicable precedent, it's monitoring the status reports. We know the status reports are not favored by this court under precedent. But the court gave us the indication it was on it. I don't think I could have come to this court again and said it's indefinite. The court is actively engaging with us. They're actively engaging with the EC. There is no fine line or bright line the court has ruled. Well, we waited many more months. Again, nothing from the EC. Everybody's been affected by COVID. I understand that excuse, but we waited several more months. And then we have the May 4th order of 2021 that denied our renewed motion. It was not a motion for reconsideration. It was a renewed motion that, as Judge Pryor pointed out, mentioned the European Commission's new pronouncement, which had 15 points in it. 9 through 15 had to do with the blocking statute. That's 40% of the points had to do with the blocking statute. We also mentioned the change in circumstances because five other folks had been to court, hadn't been sanctioned. 300 days since the application. No time frame from the EU. If the EU has said it's coming out, we have a firm deadline, maybe. We also pointed out another judge in the district had set a 5-month deadline. That had been successful. The party in that litigation got their ticket to court a few days before the five-month deadline approached. So what happened in the May 4th order that caused us to appeal? Well, the May 4th order on no less than 5 occasions said, until there's a ruling from the EC, you're not going anywhere. That is precisely the moment when the stay becomes indefinite, because there is no definition. It's relying solely on that ruling. And that's what Judge Scola said no less than five times in his May order. That was the moment when this court has jurisdiction to take our notice of appeal, because at that moment, we are effectively out of court. We have to wait for the EC. There is nothing that we can do or say, unlike what we did before, to advise the court as to things that were happening. We gave the judge new information, and he said, no. That is the moment that I can come before this court with a ticket, I think, obviously, for an appeal. Your Honors, district judges, we say, make errors all the time. Even if they make a clear error of law, we cannot come to this court. As you pointed out, Judge Grant, this is a non-final order that is only appealable under a narrow exception, and it has to be when we're effectively out of court. That was the moment we're effectively out of court, and it's borne by the record through today. And by the way, I think the court can and should look at the record through today. It's done it before. In the Peterson case that we cited in our papers, the court, when analyzing whether or not there was any prejudice, had looked at the state court record. It was, I think, Judge Pryor and Judge Grant was on the case. It's case number 19-13082, Peterson versus PNC Bank. The district court had stayed the proceedings pending a foreclosure trial. The foreclosure trial had finished. Your Honors noted that and said no prejudice. Thank you, judges. I wish you safe travels.
Thank you, Mr. Patricius. We are adjourned for the week.